himself or even knock him down. We're in and I know this isn't a boxing, the MMA is not apples to apples, but in boxing, like if you knock a guy down in boxing, it's 10-8. You know, automatic, pretty much automatically, unless a dude really comes back and forces the judge's hand. It's mostly, you put a guy on the canvas in boxing, that's a 10-8. Now, I know there's difficulties with this because it's not 12 rounds, and so, or 10 rounds. There's not that area where a guy can actually look like he can catch up. So if a guy gets a 10-8 round, you know, one, if he loses another round, there's really no way for him to come back. Two, if he's winning, you know, it could automatically be a draw. So I understand the difficulties of it. It's just weird to me the way we go and score these things. So yeah, man, it was a fun night. Some crazy night. Benel Dariush had a sick knockout on Scott Holtzman. Spinning back elbow was awesome. Kevin Holland took out Joaquin Buckley. He hit him right in the snot rocket. Knocked his mouthpiece out. So some really sick knockouts, some sick finishes on this night. And yeah, when we come back, we get to a little bit of Bellator. Bellator's on Friday night. Had the hometown girl, Valeria Lareda, fighting. You had Michael Chandler, one of my favorites, in the cage, taking on Ben Henderson. We'll get a little recap of that coming up next. We'll continue on here with Fighters Fury, everybody. It's Tobin here with you. And of course, if you miss any of the show, you can download the podcast, subscribe on the radio.com app. It's all there for you, all the episodes, all the interviews that we have for you guys. Download it there. You guys can also get us an Apple Podcast, and it's available on Google Play, all those types of platforms. Check us on out there, Fighters Fury, everybody. We had Bellator this past weekend. Fun card. We had a lot of stuff that I was very interested in watching with Bellator, which is important with them. Like, you know, they'll get me and they won't get me. I think I said this couple weeks ago when they were back on the mat. I was like, you know, they've let go of the rope a little bit as far as getting with all the stuff. It was when Aaron Pico was fighting, and they're like, you know, they kind of wanted to take the fun out of them. And I was into this card. There was a couple reasons. One, I love watching Michael Chandler fight. That guy's one of my favorite fighters on the planet, regardless of organization. So I was stoked to watch him versus Ben Henderson. Obviously, you have a rematch there. And Michael's one of those guys where he's kind of one of the last few where I'm really like, I want to see what his skill set is in the UFC. I've been wanting to see. I wish it would have happened a couple of years earlier, to be honest with you. I got why it didn't, because he was so much at, I think, the peak of his powers at lightweight, and lightweight was kind of hung up in this spot where he wasn't going to get Khabib. He wasn't going to get Conor. But I also think that there was some slippage. Obviously, he had the loss of Pitbull, so that deterred some things. He had the weirdo loss to Brett Primus with his leg going down. So he suffered a couple losses in the midst, but that dude is all action. He's super exciting, and I truly do believe that he could compete with a lot of guys in that division. And hell, I mean, we saw this with Justin Gaethje. Justin Gaethje came from World Series of Fighting and is now the interim champion of the world. So guys can come from other organizations. Bellator, Eddie Alvarez, his longtime rival, came into the UFC, won the championship. So I would love to see what that guy could do in the UFC. Fantastic win against Ben Henderson. Ends up putting him out, puts no doubt in the mind. And I do think that if that was his last fight, I think it's a good signature win to kind of go off. You know, his post-fight interview was a little bit strange because he was like, I put all the lightweights on notice. Scott Coker, you're also on notice. Let's get a deal done. So, you know, clearly he's not happy with the negotiations and he's not happy where things are at. You know, but I think there's also got to be a piece of him that wants to see is it the best time to go get a new contract with the UFC? Probably not. I imagine that, you know, free agents trying to get a deal with the UFC right now, it's not fantastic. And again, unfortunately for him, I do think that he's going into a lightweight division that is pretty stacked. I don't necessarily know that he's going to be up to the front of the line as far as getting him a title shot is concerned, just simply because, you know, you have the title fight being between Khabib and Justin. Then you have Conor waiting in the wings. You have Dustin and Tony already there. So it's not like Michael Chandler's going to come in here and he's going to get a kind of a, you know, a fast pass to the top of the rankings. But also, you know, it also comes down to him, like, well, what's left? He's 34 years old. So it's not like he's ancient. He keeps in phenomenal shape. We know this. I mean, if you guys, if you see the guy on social media, trains like an absolute monster. I just think that for him, I'd love to see him make the leap. I would love to see him make the leap. I'd love to see him fight a Dustin Poirier. I'd love to see him fight a Tony Ferguson. I'd love to see him fight a Justin Gaethje, a Conor McGregor, a Khabib. You know, I'd love to see him be thrown into the mix with all of those guys. With Bellator, he's done it all. He's been the poster child forever. It did feel like it was mostly a goodbye when he was talking, but he did throw in that last line about Scott Coker. So obviously, if Bellator comes to, you know, whatever the terms are that he wants, I think he'll stick around. I really, for them, he just brings so much, I think, credibility to their organization. I don't know how many guys they have to pay well, because they, I think, are built a lot on old heads and a lot of the exciting young prospects. There aren't many guys who are just in their, you know, you think of like they're in their prime and they're must see on Bellator, and he's one of them. So it'll be interesting to see, but I hope that this ends with Michael Chandler ending up in the UFC, because I really want to see what that looks like for him. Matt Mitrione ended up losing to Timothy Johnson. That was a tough fight for him. And, you know, there's been a couple of tough ones in a row for our guy, Matt Mitrione, who we've had on a few times on this program. And, of course, he's king of the Kimbo stories. So I always have a special place in my heart for Matt Mitrione, but he's now lost a couple in a row. He's lost technically three in a row, because he lost to Sergey Karatanov on their rematch after he kicked him right in the nuts and broke his balls, really. And he lost to Ryan Bader in the Grand Prix. And it's unfortunate for Matt. We talked to him a little bit about this the last time we had him on, and we were discussing the fact that, you know, that Grand Prix kind of came around. He probably should have just been fighting right for the title after his win over Roy, and him and Roy don't like each other. He had the knockout over Fedor. So his Bellator career started off like wildfire. It's in a little bit of a skid right now. So that'll be interesting. He was, you know, he's obviously one of their big draws as well. A little bit more probably on the backside than Michael Chandler is, being 42 years old, but is, you know, one of their best ambassadors. The other big thing locally, if you were tuning into this card, the big one that I was looking forward to was seeing Valerie Lareda. She was going for her third professional win. She was 2-0, took this fight on 3 weeks' notice, and it's been a while since we've seen Valerie in the cage. She had some injuries. Obviously, the pandemic's kind of messed with everybody's plans. But man, I mean, that I thought was I don't want to say a star-making performance, because I do think, you know, she, in her own way, she is probably one of the most popular fighters for her age. But I do think that it put a lot of people on notice. And, I would like to get some clarification on this from her. But I thought when they went to the cage, when they went to her corner, you know, she's a Taekwondo. She's literally a Taekwondo master. And they went to the corner of the cage, and they were telling her to go in there and throw some kicks. And I thought she said no, that she wasn't interested in that. She didn't want to go in there and start throwing kicks at Tara Graf. She was moving, you know, she puts on a crazy, almost like a crazy movement pace. Like she's almost like, it's almost like trying to wrangle a cobra into a corner. And, you know, she's just on her bicycle, moving. It just never stops, never seems to get tired. But her hands were looking great. I mean, it really was, you know, she was, you know, the smaller fighter, but man, her stuff was just crisper. It was cleaner. She was hitting a nasty jab on Tara, and then ends up just at the buzzer hitting her with this absolute hammer that puts her down. And look, if you're going to get that stuff from Valerie Lareda, you know, I just think that you have a bona fide star in the making if you are Bellator. It's a tough thing, man. And you know, for her to be the age she is, we've seen what's happened with, you know, we've seen what happens with the likes of Aaron Pico and Kimbo Slice Jr. and all that type of stuff. They bring these guys out, and it's kind of a blessing that these, young fighters are going to get their entire career put out on display, but it's also tough because you're going to see all those warts and all that growing pains. And she grew a lot in this fight, it felt like. And seemingly wanted to do it on different terms too. You know, like I would like to know what the whole game plan of that was, but it seemed like she didn't want to go necessarily to the bread and butter. Like she went in there with the purpose of wanting to outstrike this woman with her fists. And we really didn't see that kicking technique that obviously she's going to have a benefit and probably a leg up on anybody she steps in there. I mean, she was, you know, doing Taekwondo in onesies. Like I think that it's pretty awesome that she has the mindset that she wanted to go in there and try and outstrike this woman with straight up her hands. And really cool performance. A lot of people were like, oh, you know, too much with the dancing on the woman's grave. You know, and she's doing the, you know, not just an IG model, all that type of stuff. Look, man, F that. From my standpoint, like if you go and you knock somebody the bleep out like that, and you have that kind of performance on a few weeks, you're in the midst of this pandemic, it's tough to train, and this woman's talking crap about you, and you know, saying what kind of a role model you are, or you know, whether you're just here for Instagram likes and all that type of stuff, and you go and outfight that person, you could dance on the grave, man, for all I care. I think it's awesome. And I think that, I think, you know, obviously she's not quite at a Masvidal level of fame right now, but I do think in Miami, I think people are kind of picking up to her almost quicker in her career than they did with George. You know, George was, you know, known by hardcores down here and things like that. But Valerie, I think, can blow up, man. I think she's something special, especially going and winning a fight like that, where it really felt like she paced herself well. She was looking for the right opportunity, caught Tara Graf napping, and night, put her out at the buzzer of the lights. So that for me was the real highlight of the Bellator card. It was interesting seeing what she was going to bring to the table this night, and she did not disappoint. Not disappointed in the least bit. So that's a little recap of that. When we come back, we'll get into a little bit of UFC 252. Daniel Cormier, Stipe Miocic. We'll get into a little preview of the heavyweight championship of the world. That's coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. It is Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Tobin here with you. All right, let's get into a little bit of UFC 252 coming up next week. We have Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight championship of the world. Trilogy fight between these two gentlemen, both of them winning their fights via knockout. You had Daniel Cormier, who I really felt like his first win against Stipe was a legacy maker for him because, you know, I think for the longest time, it was going to just be he was the guy who couldn't beat John Jones. And that was going to be Daniel Cormier's legacy now and forever. For better or worse, it was going to be he couldn't beat John Jones. He wasn't good enough. He was great, but he was always second best. And him beating Stipe the way that he did with Stipe, I think in everybody's mind, pretty much solidified as, if not the best heavyweight of all time, the best heavyweight resume out there for sure. And the fact that, you know, he had more title defenses than anybody. And so for DC to get that win, that knockout against Stipe was a real, I think, legacy maker for him. The second time around, I think the thing that's going to be interesting about it is, I think we've seen a lot of rounds between these guys. And I think the thing that's interesting about it is that Stipe won that last fight, and he had such success against DC in that last fight. After seemingly he was pretty frustrated the first time around, you know, it was a situation where DC looked like he had this one in the bag and then left himself open for those body shots. And Stipe found something that worked and DC really didn't have an answer for it. And so you look at these guys and you think, all right, well, how is, you know, what is this going to come down to? Does Stipe realize that he's got a weakness there that he could really expose this first time around like he did the second time around? Or does Daniel feel like he had that one pretty much wrapped up and he could find a safer route to go get to the end of this thing? It's an interesting case for it. I lean the way because I've seen just seeing the way the majority of these fights have played out between these guys. I feel like Daniel Cormier's got the better route to go win, and that I feel like he left himself open. He made a bad mistake the last time around. But you know, I think that he's a smart enough fighter to not come around and let that happen again in this third fight. But the counterpoint to that would be, you know, if you're Stipe, like you withheld a very frustrating three rounds with this guy and you were still able to find your way to victory. Probably didn't even fight your best fight, didn't fight great, but you were still able to find yourself on the path to winning this bout. It's a tough thing to crack. Let me check what the odds are right now for these suckers. Miocic odds. Let's see. Right now you got me. They're basically it's at pick'em right now. It's a very even fight according to the odds makers. Both of these guys minus. You got Stipe -110, DC -120. You're talking about two absolute hammers, two legends. Who both can dictate their styles. Look, DC, his striking is pretty damn good. I mean, it's gotten a lot better. I even thought in the John Jones fights, I thought that he was showing elements to his hands that we hadn't seen. I mean, he's a badass man. He really is. You know, he definitely can go win fights boring. That's for sure. And we've seen that where, you know, a lot of the times he takes on these one-dimensional guys, the Derek Lewis's, the Anthony Rumble Johnsons, and he lets those guys tucker themselves out and he goes and he chokes them out. Like that's his path to going and winning those fights. But, he's shown some pretty vicious striking too. And, you know, that was point positive in the first fight with Stipe. You wonder about, obviously this is a retirement fight for him. Is that on, how much is that weighing on his mind? How much is, this is the end. You know, what temptations kind of lie after this? I think the thing that'll be interesting is if he does win, there has been some talk about, you know, Dana throwing a ton of money at him for a John Jones fight. I think it was his coach, Javier Mendez, who said DC likes his money. You know, but DC's got himself. I really, really believe this. And I've said this on my shows numerous times, is I think he's the best thing in broadcasting right now. So I hope that he's done fighting after this. I understand wanting to complete the trilogy. I think it's necessary for him. These guys are 1-1. They were two thrilling endings, two unexpected endings. I think a lot of people thought that DC was going to that first fight and they thought that that Stipe was gonna win, and DC put it on him. And then I think a lot of people went into that second fight thinking DC, well, he beat him that way. We didn't expect him to knock him out like that. So obviously if a fight goes longer, he's going to beat Stipe, and Stipe ends up winning the fight late by TKO. So they've been very unpredictable results both times going into it, I think. But that being said, DC to me is like, he's the best thing in broadcasting going right now. I don't really want to see him fight anymore as far as the John Jones thing. Look, if he at best goes and beats John Jones at heavyweight, does that swing things for people? Maybe. I mean, maybe it does. I don't know. But then does he want to go down that path again? I feel like he's separated. He's done the rare thing, and I don't think that this was going to happen for him without beating Stipe. I feel like the John Jones thing, he's put that stuff past him. He is one of the most beloved guys in mixed martial arts. People love him on the microphone. He's good at it. He's personable. He could be a media star. He could go do World Wrestling Entertainment. He's going to be fine. I don't feel like he needs a ton of money thrown at him from the UFC for a John Jones fight. You know, he's not at that point in his career. He's made a lot of money. He has a lot of money. He's going to make a lot of money. I think it's etched in stone for him. So I hope this is it for him. Win or lose. I don't want him to fight a freak show, Francis or John Jones. I just hope this is it for Stipe. You know, obviously, I don't think Stipe has the post-broadcasting career that DC does. He's a bit of a mush mouth, and especially after that Francis fight, it sounds, you know, you could, you know, sometimes barely understand what the hell he's saying. And for that reason, I wouldn't even be mad at Stipe if he said, this is it. Because who are they going to put him in there with? He's going to, is he going to, you know, a super fight with John Jones would be cool. I don't know if John's going to do that fight, but maybe he will. We'll see. You know, is he going to fight Francis again and get his brains rocked even more? Is he going to fight Derek Lewis and get his brain, you know? I think that, you know, you have these types of fights. And the other thing with Stipe is I don't think that Stipe is ever going to be promoted the way DC is. I just don't. I think they know that, you know, they have a guy who's a really good fighter, but he's kind of just out of tier as far as what his star power will be. So I hope that, like, if he goes and gets this win against DC, yeah, kind of, I do hope it's it. Also, just mostly because the way he talks is like, man, it feels like fighting got to him quick. Like, what's that gonna sound like if he fights a little bit even more? So, in a way, I almost hope that whoever comes out on top of this, they call it a career. I think it's probably likely that Stipe continues going. And I do think that for DC, I think it'll probably be it. So, you know, we'll see. But I would almost like this to be almost the close to a chapter book for these two. I want it to be DC and Stipe, whoever wins, whoever loses, and they just ride off into the sunset. And then we have this new era of Francis and Curtis Blaydes and maybe John Jones and Jairzinho Rozenstruik and whoever else is next coming down the pipe, and throw Derek Lewis in the mix there as well, even though he's not as young. I would almost like that to be the next kind of era that's thrown in there for heavyweight. And I think it's pretty damn exciting. So I think I'm going to pick DC to win this fight. I just feel like I've seen him win more rounds in what we've seen. And I do think that he more so left a mistake open, maybe was a little bit tapped out, couldn't get to his defense on it. I don't see him making that mistake again. I think that he's going to find a path to win this fight. I think he's a smart fighter. And I don't think he's going to make that mistake twice against Stipe. So I'm going to go with Stipe to win this fight. The rest of this card is fun because you got Junior Dos Santos taking on Jairzinho Rozenstruik. I'm a big Rozenstruik fan. I like the boys from Suriname. I like him. I love, you know, my guy's Tyrone Spong. This is kind of like his MMA little protege. And I was hoping he would get the win against Francis and catapult right to the top. That dude's got big balls on him, man. He really does. So he gets a fight in here with Junior Dos Santos. Well, it's going to be interesting for Jairzinho because, you know, I do think that he had that Hail Mary win against that Overeem, and Overeem is a more versatile striker. He was on his way to winning that fight, and he kind of just came with the bomb from heaven or hell, wherever you want to call it, and broke open his face. With Junior, you know, you're taking on JDS. JDS is a really, really versatile striker. He's working with my guy, Dia Davis, now. You know, to have a guy like that, he already was a sharp boxer, one of the best, you know, people say, who are the best boxers in the UFC? A lot of people say Jorge Masvidal. A lot of people say Junior Dos Santos. Jairzinho, he's got crazy bombs. But Junior Dos Santos has finished the best of them. You know, like, he's been in there with the best of them. He's finished the best of them. So, you know, and they've done this with the young lions where, like, he took on a Tai Tuivasa where they were like, oh, this is going to be next coming, and wiped him out. Took out Derek Lewis. You know, so it's tough. You know, he did lose two. He's on a two-fight losing streak, so he's lost to Curtis and he's lost to Francis. So he's lost to the two, I guess you could call them, the young lions of the division recently. But he's still really, really good. He's still really, really good. And if you're putting him in a matchup where he doesn't really have to worry about getting taken down, it is going to be a straight up a stand-up fest. Yeah, I mean, I could see Jairzinho having some struggle. And plus, the way he got knocked out, that's always a tough one too. What Rozenstruiker are we going to see come to the cage? What is going to be on full display for him here? So it's tough. I mean, I'm more of a Rozenstruiker guy. I like the guy. He's a cool dude. Obviously, I'm very biased with JDS because of who's training him now. So I don't really want to pick the fight. I want to be a chicken bleep when it comes to this one. I think if I had to guess, to be honest with you, I feel like I could see JDS coming in and winning a decision here. Like I feel, or stopping it late. Like I think Jorginho gives it his best go. And if he doesn't get him in the first round, it feels like then it's JDS's fight to win pretty easily. But we'll see. And then, of course, look, you know, to be honest with you, it's you look at all these matchups that we got going on, but it's tough not to look at a fight night like this and see Sugar Sean O'Malley on there, and he's now the co-main event on a pay-per-view, and think that guy is the star of the show. You know, like you're going to see two legends fight in the main event. You're going to see a legend in JDS, a former champion, fight Jarzino Rozenstruik, who is young-ish, up and coming. You're going to see a lot of veteran names there, man. You're going to see John Dodson on the card. You're going to see Jim Miller on the card and all this type of stuff. But Sean O'Malley feels like he could be the next era. Like, he's the dude. And carries himself like he's the dude. And this is to think that he even had a layoff because of, like, a USADA thing. It's pretty nuts. But if you want to talk about, like, what's must watch, I mean, it's tough not to look at this and say, yeah, I got to go watch, see what Sugar Sean O'Malley has to bring to the table, especially with the way he has been up in the game on as far as talking guys out and the way that he just carries himself. He, you know, what he did to Eddie Wineland was criminal. It was so sick. So he calls himself the best striker in the UFC. He's got a situation here in Marlon Vera where, you know, it's he was riding pretty high. He's coming off a loss on this one, but you know, they're doing the thing with him where they're just trying to showcase this guy and get people excited about him. It's not to say that Marlon can't go get a win, but it feels right now like this kid could be the next coming and the next superstar for their organization. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing Sean O'Malley fight. It just feels like he's at the point where, like, all right, Sean's fighting. It's an event. And then what do they do with him? That's going to be interesting. You know, I was very much into watching, you know, the way that bantamweight night where they had everybody showcased him versus Cody. I was into that matchup, but I do get not doing it because if he beats Cody, then you got to put him in for a title shot. And then you don't want to almost fast track him too much. It's like, he's at this fine point where he can reach stardom, but you want to put it almost on the right trajectory. You don't want to hit it too quick because he's only, what is Sean? He's only 25. I mean, it's not super young. It's young, but it's not like he's 22. So I would say after this, co-main eventing a pay-per-view, I got to imagine the next thing is you got to main event him on a card against somebody in the bantamweight division. Now, is that, you know, I would say beating Marlon Vera, that doesn't put you in line for the title. If he would have beaten Cody, then you got to start talking title with him because simply you're talking about a former champion. Like, how many more guys are there to go beat? With Sean, you know, he's finding himself now at 14, goes and wins this fight. You know, then you got to start talking about, you know, do you put him in there with somebody in the top 10, how long is that slow burn going to be for them before they put him out there? But he's definitely, I think, one of the showcases of the night. It's cool that they're putting him in that position. So looking forward to next week, everybody. For sure, we'll have a full recap for you guys. If you missed any of the show, download the podcast. We'll be back, of course, same time, same place for the morning show, 6 to 10 a.m. on Monday. And we love you guys and talk to you soon. Bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.